This is a sidebar on our continuing recordings about the assassination of JFK and the evidence against Lee Harvey Oswald. And really, this series is concerned with bringing to light the scandal of the idea of a conspiracy in this simple murder case. As Vincent Bugliosi pointed out, the JFK assassination is really two stories in one. On the one hand, it's a simple murder case, with the overwhelming evidence against one man, in this case, Lee Oswald. On the other hand, it's been a controversy that has become the most sophisticated murder case over time because so many writers have added layer upon layer of confusion that's really manufactured and designed to make the assassination more mysterious than it really is. So in the minds of most people, the assassination is a riddle wrapped in a mystery surrounded by an enigma, which, of course, is the famous quotation trying to describe the Soviet Union, attributed to Winston Churchill in the 1940s. But there's been a kind of weird irony in this story, and that is that the conspiracists who claim a complex conspiracy in the case accuse the Warren Commission of misrepresenting the assassination and of hiding evidence. But in fact, this very claim should be leveled against the conspiracy writers who have hidden evidence all the time. As I said in a previous episode, they've tried to airbrush Oswald out of the story altogether because the evidence against Oswald is so overwhelming that it's a huge, inconvenient reality for these conspiracy theorists who want to make a mystery out of something that's pretty cut and dried. So they're the ones who try to turn the heads of people away from Oswald to the point where they say nothing at all about Oswald, as I've said before. And there is a tendency among people, because people are short on time, that if they're going to look at history at all, they would like to have a definitive book to tell them about whatever event they're interested in. People are genuinely interested in things like the Normandy invasion of 1944, or the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863, or the Mexican War and what happened at the Alamo, or the Spanish-American War and Remember the Maine. They genuinely want to know the facts, but they don't want to spend their whole life studying a particular issue in the past. In fact, wading into the past at all is a digression for most people who have their lives full of obligations far more weighty than just what happened in the deep, dark past. So people want to know, they are interested in history. That's something with which they should be proud. They're responsible citizens. But they don't want to read 10 books about the same event. They want to read the definitive book so they can move on to other subjects, whether that be historical subjects or subjects that are seemingly more momentous to them, more present-day oriented. Now, of course, I believe that history is present-day oriented. You can't understand the present without understanding the past. And if I could make a sidebar in this sidebar recording, I would say that the election of 1864 is a tremendously relevant example for today, because in 1864, Abraham Lincoln was running for re-election in the middle of a great civil war, as he put it, and Lincoln, at one point before the election, thought that he would lose because the war news was pretty bad in 1863 and 1864, and the grinding struggle had gone on for so long that many people in the North were just sick and tired of it. And so Lincoln concluded that he was going to lose the election, and he thought that if he did lose, he would have to try to save the Union in the few months he had between the election and the inauguration of the new president. Well, I'm getting to the point of what this has to do with the JFK assassination, and I promise I will get to that in a few seconds. But at any rate, Lincoln was saved at the last minute by General Sherman's victory over the South in Georgia at the Battle of Atlanta in September 1864. And that turned the tide of public opinion in the North in Lincoln's favor, so that he won the election of 1864. The election of 1864 was the most important election in American history prior to the election of 2024, the election that's going to happen this year, because the nation's democratic political system is in deep peril because of the candidacy of Donald Trump, who has mesmerized the entire Republican Party, which is in thrall to Trump. Never before has a great or once great political party been subservient to the power-hungry interests of so selfish a man, so ignorant a man, so anti-democratic a man in American history as Donald Trump. And so we face a peril in this year 2024 that is no less grave than the peril that Americans faced in 1864 when Abraham Lincoln, in the middle of the Civil War, was trying to win re-election. In fact, it may be even graver today than in 1864, if you think about it, because the danger in 1864 was that the North might lose the American Civil War, which was pretty grave indeed. But if the North had lost the Civil War, that would mean that the South would go its own way, and of course, the shackles of slavery would be held tighter than ever around the limbs of the slaves of the South, the millions of slaves. And that would, of course, have been disastrous. But democracy, American democracy, would live on in the northern states. So American democracy was not directly threatened by the Southern secession of 1861. If the South had won the Civil War, democracy would still be alive and well in the North. Now, Lincoln was worried that a rump state, the United States, much smaller than it had been, would prove an unfertile ground for the survival of democracy. But it is by no means assured that American democracy would die a sad death as the result of the defeat in the Civil War, the defeat of the North. Certainly, the United States would not have become the world power that it ultimately became, but it is by no means assured that American democracy would die as a result of such a loss. Today, in 2024, we are facing the possibility of the death of American democracy in all 50 states because of the potential victory of a grifter who hates democracy, who wants to model himself after the authoritarians of the past and the present. And this threat is the darkest threat we've faced since the Civil War. One might argue it's even graver than the Civil War. So when we study the election of 1864, it's not an old arcane topic of no relevance to today. It is deeply, deeply relevant. And it can give us determination to fight as hard as Americans did in 1864, when we understand the stakes which Americans overcame, and when we understand that this was no easy victory, this was no guaranteed thing, that history is contingent, and that it could always have turned out differently, then we might become more determined to do the right thing in this year 2024, rally to the flag, rally around the flag, and re-elect President Biden, the only sure way to ensure the survival of American democracy in this year 2024. Now, getting back to the assassination of JFK, what we see with the conspiracy writers is the same thing we see today in the twisting of the truth by those who want to use, say, social media, a form of propaganda, to cloud the realities that face us in 2024. And the conspiracy writers in the JFK case have been preparing the ground all these decades for the same kind of flim-flam we see infecting American politics this year. Much of this distortion is coming from abroad. It's coming from foreign actors such as the Russians and the Chinese who are trying to flood social media with false posts designed to distort public opinion and to get public opinion to believe in falsehoods. Well, this type of distortion of accusing one's opponents of the same tactics that the fraudulent writers themselves use has a long history in writing about the JFK assassination. Today is March 31st, 2024, and there have been some posts on social media reminding Americans that in 1963, on this very day, March 31st, Lee Harvey Oswald took those famous pictures, or had the famous pictures taken, of him with the rifle that was later used to murder JFK and the pistol that was later used to murder Officer J.D. Tippit, standing in the backyard of his home and having his picture taken by his wife, Marina. And these pictures would later become important because they were hard evidence that Oswald was, of course, connected to the murder weapons in both cases of November 22nd. It's hard to deny the power of this evidence. And yet the conspiracy theorists have been up to the task in terms of having the chutzpah, having the gall, having the lack of principle to knowingly misrepresent the truth in order to manipulate people into believing falsehoods. When people are willing to shred their own reputations or abandon all respect for ethics and truth itself, then we are in quite a pickle because we don't know how to defend ourselves against charges that may be fact, but in fact are actually frauds. And this is the unfortunate situation we find ourselves in this year 2024. But I noticed that there were responses to Gerald Posner's very accurate descriptions of these photographs taken of Oswald on March 31st, 1963. And some of the old conspiracists are coming out with their lies again. They say, oh, that's not the rifle that killed JFK. That was a Mauser, not a Mannlicher Carcano that Oswald owned. Or they say, there were too many bullets fired into the body of Tippit to be fired by one man alone, when we know for a fact that there were just four shots fired, and all the shells were recovered from those four shots, and the bullets and the shells matched Oswald's pistol to the exclusion of all other pistols. That fact was set forth in the Warren Commission's Warren Report back in 1964, and it hasn't changed since then. But the conspiracists continue to try to cloud the public's knowledge of this by saying just the opposite, even though the truth has been known since 1964. They also say that the bullets in Tippit were fired from different guns. As I said, all of the bullets were traced to cartridges, and the bullets themselves were found to be from Oswald's pistol to the exclusion of all other pistols. As for the so-called German Mauser, that was a rifle that looked a lot like the Mannlicher Carcano, and the Dallas policeman who first discovered the Mannlicher Carcano had never seen a Mannlicher Carcano, but he had seen a Mauser. And he said, I think it's a Mauser. That was on November 22nd, but within 24 hours, he had changed his mind once he saw a picture of a Mannlicher Carcano and noticed that that rifle matched the rifle found on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository much closer than a Mauser. It was a simple error of identification. The sort of thing in the heat of the moment that happens to us all. But in the world of the conspiracists, people are not allowed to change their minds. People are not allowed to make mistakes that they later correct. Every mistake they make is seen to be sinister in some way. And if the Dallas policeman had identified it as a Mannlicher Carcano, people would have said, now, how could he have known that so fast? So this is what we face when we deal with the conspiracists. As an historian, I try to avoid dealing with them at all costs. Because in this year 2024, we have enough on our hands with the fraudsters and the mountebanks and the shysters who are trying to obscure the real meaning, the real stakes of the election this year. We've got to set our attention on these problems. But sometimes history and the present rhyme. And sometimes by studying the past, such as the election of 1864, we can gird ourselves all the more to the significance of the events of the present, which seem all the more significant when we understand what has happened in the past, for good as well as for harm. In the rest of this program, as has been long promised, we look at the strengths of the Warren Commission. First of all, the staff, diversified by geography, were from Ivy League colleges and had distinguished careers ahead of them, to a man. They were all men, except for Alfreda Scobie, who served as the eyes and ears of the commissioner from Georgia, Senator Richard Russell. The commissioners included, in addition to Russell, Senator John Sherman Cooper of Kentucky, Representatives Hale Boggs and Gerald Ford, both Republicans, Alan Dulles, former head of the CIA, and wise man John J. McCloy, whose service went back to FDR's administration. It is simply absurd to think that these men, who had been the best and brightest of American government for decades, would protect a conspiracy by the government to kill JFK. But these men did not write the report. The staff did. They served as assistant counsel, were all from the most distinguished institutions of higher education, and included Francis W. Adams, Joseph Ball, David Bellin, William T. Coleman, the only African-American, Milvin Eisenberg, Burt W. Griffin, Leon Hubert, Albert Jenner, Wesley Liebeler, Norman Redlich, Arlen Specter, Samuel Stern, and Howard P. Willens, who was the liaison between the commission and the Attorney General, Robert F. Kennedy, the late president's brother. Checking the footnote references for accuracy was the job of Stephen Breyer, most recently a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. They were each assigned different aspects of the case to investigate. They did the legwork, the evidence collection, the checking behind the FBI to make sure that the investigation by the FBI was professional. They quickly discovered that the FBI had rushed and fumbled its investigation. What they did not know was that the FBI was determined to hide evidence of its poor record in keeping tabs on Oswald before the assassination, or rather to hide the fact that the FBI had followed Oswald but had obviously not stopped the assassination from happening. In other words, had the FBI come clean on all that it knew about Oswald before the assassination, its failure to do more to keep tabs on Oswald could have been defensible. They just wanted to cover up what it did know in order to keep on the safe side of its narrow bureaucratic interests. As for the FBI investigation of the assassination itself, it was rushed and riddled with errors. The CIA, on the other hand, really betrayed the Warren Commission. Alan Dulles was on the commission, and he knew that the CIA, the agency that he had recently run, had launched assassination plots against Castro during the Kennedy years. He knew that perhaps these plots had blown back on JFK. Perhaps the allegations of these plots, which were no secret to anyone who read the newspapers in 1962 and 1963, had inspired Oswald to defend his hero, Castro, by shooting JFK entirely on his own. Knowledge of that information might besmirch the reputation of JFK himself. In fact, these plots against Castro were led from within the White House by the two Kennedy brothers themselves. Of that there is no doubt. A poison pen, meant for Castro, was delivered to an agent in Paris on November the 22nd, the very day of the assassination. Robert Kennedy was in a state of traumatized mourning for 6 months after the assassination, and probably for the rest of his own short life. He always had to wonder if the actions of he and JFK himself had led to his brother's murder, inadvertently and accidentally. He also had to worry that this information, at some point, would come out, which it did. It is almost certain that Alan Dulles, a friend of the Kennedy family, was taken aside by Robert Kennedy before the Warren Commission began its work and was told to keep mum about the CIA's plots to kill Castro. And keep mum, both Dulles and Kennedy did. When the facts came out in the 1970s, the reputation of the Kennedys and of the government itself took quite a hit, at just the time when Watergate was shredding the faith of the American people in their own government. 2 points need to be made about this. First, this was not evidence of conspiracy, unless you mean a conspiracy by the government to kill Castro. Second, the Warren Commission's ignorance of these plots cannot be laid at the door of the Warren Commission or its staff. There was a conspiracy by RFK and by Dulles to hide the conspiracy against Castro from the Warren Commission, which was successful. It is hard to see how the Warren Commission could have prevented or uncovered this. But had the Warren Commission known about it, people would have had the answer to the question, why did a Marxist like Lee Oswald want JFK, a politician on the left, killed? The answer was that Oswald had read and believed Castro's complaints that the Kennedy brothers were gunning for Castro. And Oswald believed that if the Cold War was an existential threat, as the Kennedys said it was existential for both sides. And if Kennedy could approve assassination against Castro, it was permissible, in Oswald's mind, for the foot soldiers for Castro, like Oswald, to respond in kind. The assassination would be a lot less mysterious had all this been known by the Warren Commission. It was the CIA, not the Warren Commission, which blocked it from being known, and it was the FBI, not the Warren Commission, which withheld crucial evidence from the Warren Commission that also would have clarified the reasons for the JFK assassination. We will look at more of the strengths of the Warren Commission in our next program. Until then, happy listening. That's it for today's episode of AudiblySpeaking.com. New podcast episodes appear on AudiblySpeaking.com approximately once every 2 weeks. Please subscribe to Audibly Speaking on iTunes or whatever podcast aggregator you enjoy. Until next time, this is Rick Ryman. Happy listening.